You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just catching us, we're listening to Carbon Math with Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org, and John Hoffmeister, CEO of Citizens for Affordable Energy and former president of Shell Oil Company. They talk about the current state of energy and technology and the climate and agree that the world needs better energy alternatives, but disagree on when the needed changes will happen.
I teach at Arizona State in the Global Institute of Sustainability. I took my students through an exercise yesterday. What would a mass market of electric cars look like in Phoenix, Arizona on a holiday weekend? And how would we go about supplying batteries if the vast majority of cars in the fleet were electric? And it was a tremendous exercise for the students to go through, but it pointed out the challenges that we face.
You know what? We solved this battery problem by doing the plug-in hybrid. 90% of the time, people don't need to, the amount they drive in the course of a day falls within the range of that battery. And then you have this backup for the engine, small engine for the times you need otherwise. And it's not unaffordable. You can go buy a Ford Fusion today with a plug-in hybrid vehicle, and it's, you know, it's about $30,000+. It's less than the average cost of an average vehicle in this country, and it works just fine. This is not like some science fiction thing that's impossible to imagine. It's at the showroom now.
I think in terms of the broader implications of your question, we can ultimately innovate and use ever-increasing valuable technology as we should. That's our history as a people. But we have to, you know, invest in it. And whether it's companies or the U.S. government, we have fallen down as a nation, as a society, in tolerating and in paying for real serious research and development. If we go back to the 1960s and the John F. Kennedy-led race to the moon, and the amount of technology, the amount of research and development that went into the nation, you saw upward slopes in spending. The slopes are all now flatter down. And that's not what's going to get us forward. I support President Obama's statement the other day on the importance, yes, I think it was this morning he said it, on the need for more investment in technology and innovation so that we're the leaders, not the followers. But we haven't done it. That's why I think we've slowed down so much
in innovation. Should oil companies also invest more in cleaner technologies?
I think you have to leave that to the individual oil companies. Some will, some won't. Anybody that thinks the oil companies are monolithic or homogeneous, think again. They're not. They compete vigorously. And there is research going on in the Exxon laboratories today for biofuels that exceeds what any other company is doing. Good for them. There's research going on in other oil companies, Chevron and Shell and so forth, to figure out what is its competitive advantage, what will its niche be to turn the tables on the future, to earn returns for their shareholders. They don't think alike. They don't act alike. And you know, they're organized around API, yes. I wouldn't deny that.
American
Petroleum Institute or Chamber of Commerce. But the important point is to be at the table. If I wasn't at the table in the Chamber of Commerce or the American Petroleum Institute, I wouldn't be expressing my views. But I express the same views to Francis Beinecke at NRDC.
Yeah, but you stuck right with the Chamber of Commerce when they were sending 93% of their campaign money off to climate deniers. I mean, you might have been behind the scenes expressing your views. We wouldn't know, but
I didn't quit. I didn't quit.
Yeah.
If you quit, you're gone. You're out of there.
Well, you would have had exactly the same result, and people would have known that you were upset with them, which nobody did.
The process doesn't work that way. If you're not at the table, there's no voice there. You know, and then it becomes a reactionary problem.
You said a minute ago that you were a pragmatist, not a theorist, but I don't think that that's really correct. At this point, pragmatism demands all-out grappling with this problem. We melted the Arctic this summer. When you start losing your big physical features of the planet, that's a pragmatic threat that needs to be dealt with, not in the long distance, sometime far out from now. It needs to be dealt with now and urgently, and not by saying, let's try to keep our advantage going for a while, and maybe we'll think of something to come up with next. It means it's a good idea to go do some more research, but in the meantime, let's deploy every single tool we have as fast as we can. And the way that we'll do that is overcoming the fossil fuel industry's unwillingness to put a price on carbon. You guys are the only ones in the world who get to put your waste out for free. You go down the street to a restaurant, you know, kitchen closes at the end of the night. They're not allowed to just shovel the garbage out into the middle of the street. That would be uncivilized. Only the fossil fuel industry gets to pour CO2 out without a price. Economists for a quarter century have said internalize that externality, but always it's the APIs of the world that keep it from happening.
Phil McKibben is author of Earth, the Living on a Making a Life on a Challenging New Planet, also founder of 350.org. Other guests today at Climate One is John Hofmeister, former president of Shell Oil Company. I'm Greg Dalton. Bill McKibben, I'd like to ask you about climate and polls, and then we're going to go shortly to audience questions. But the reality is, when Americans are asked about climate change, it ranks very low toward the bottom in terms of their concerns, economy, jobs, health, etc. So politicians get criticized for not mentioning climate, but the fact is, American people in polls, it's not a top concern.
So here's the good news. That's changing fast. The Rasmussen poll out this morning shows 68% of Americans think that it's a very serious problem. 74% of Americans are clear that the climate is warming. It's hard to get 74% of Americans to agree on anything, okay? I mean, half this country believes Elvis is still alive, you know, so this is a start. Those responses have all spiked dramatically in the last couple of years because 80% of Americans live in counties that have had a federally declared disaster. I mean, we watch what's happening. Now what we need is some real leadership from government, from industry, to take that and run with it hard. That's why theoretically we call them leaders, you know, as opposed to, you know, poll-following devices or whatever.
I think John would agree with you there. John, leadership has not been what it should be.
Well, leadership in this country needs a broom handle down its back, if you ask me to be blunt about it. But I can't let Bill's last statement stand on the fossil fuel industry being the only industry that gets to put its garbage out for free. The American consumer, ladies and gentlemen, is not paying the price, the full price, for electricity across this entire nation. Because every state in this country is emitting, one way or another, gaseous waste that we all get the benefit of a lower electricity price, because the public utility commissions around this country, virtually all 50 states, know that if they put a price on emissions that affected the electricity price, they wouldn't hold their jobs. So this is not to be blamed solely on the fossil fuel industry. This is a societal issue that affects every consumer of electricity, every consumer of transportation fuels. And let's not just focus and concentrate on a pejorative associated with an industry called fossil fuel industry. This is an endemic problem. And while 74% may agree, go back to the polls, may agree this is a big problem, how much more are people willing to take in their electricity price or their gasoline price to do something about
That's
it.
That's why we need one of the good things that's happened in the last year or two is the real emergence of really forward-thinking solutions. And the best is this thing, fee and dividend, that people have begun talking about. You put a honking price on fossil fuel, you know, make Shell at the wellhead pay a lot of money, and they pass the price on at the pump, which is good. You know, we should be paying European levels at the pump, because then each time we went to the pump, we'd be reminded that it does not require a semi-military vehicle to collect your groceries, you know. But then you take all the money that you collect from that, and you just write a check for everybody in the country for their share. Because if the sky belongs to anybody, it belongs to all of us, not to Shell, you know. 80% of Americans come out ahead in that kind of scheme. If you use huge amounts of energy, you don't. If you own a Learjet, you don't. But at this point, you probably shouldn't really be owning a Learjet.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
As some environmental liberals do,
I have a biodiesel bus, you know, for the month, so I'm...
British Columbia, by the way, is doing exactly what Bill McKibben just said. They have a carbon tax, and it's refunded to people so that it's revenue neutral. We're going to invite your participation. If you're on this side of the audience, please go around. The line starts over there with our producer, Jane Ann. We're going to get as many as we can. We'll promise brisk questions and brisk answers. We invite you one-part question. If you need help keeping it brief, I'm here for you. And then we'll get through as many as we can, and our apologies in advance to those we can't get to. If you're just joining us, our guests here at Climate One today are John Hofmeister, former president of Shell Oil, and Bill McKibben, the environmental advocate. I'm Greg Dalton. We're talking about energy and the recent election. Let's have our audience question. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Angelo Festa. I'm a resident in San Francisco. I just want to, more than anything, share with this audience the fact that since April of 2011, I have driven about 20,000 miles without purchasing a single gallon of gasoline. What that means is when BP announced their $4 billion quarterly profit, I didn't contribute a cent. I just want you to know, folks, it's a great feeling to drive an electric car because you sleep better at night. You know you're not part of the problem. And it's very doable. It's the technology's here. You don't have to wait for better batteries. The technology's here, and there are affordable models. Thank you.
As an EV owner, I would say they're fun to drive, too. Let's have our next audience question. Yes.
Okay. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Carlene Cullen, and I'm a Bay Area mom who started a climate change program for kids about 6 years ago. It's expanded now to 23 states, and we're reaching about 250,000 kids and their families. These kids are young. They're K through 5. They're so full of hope. When we teach them about carbon and climate change, and we tell them they can be part of the solution, they're so energetic. They run home to mom and dad. They get them to start engaging. I would like for both of our speakers to pretend this is a group of K through 5 kids, 7 to 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. Talk to them about the future of climate change. Thank you.
John, I don't know if you have grandkids that age or kids. So what would you say to youth about the urgency of the solution?
Well, I founded Citizens for Affordable Energy for the very purpose that she just described, but children of all ages, not just K through 5. My story would be, we are where we are over a long history of getting to where we came to, but that doesn't necessarily predict the future, that the future can be very different because we have something called technology. The technologies that we have going forward will create a very different future, and we can start describing what those technologies look like. And I would say the same thing as the other gentleman about hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Having driven a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, I never want to drive anything else.
But technology is not enough. Would you admit that policy has to be part of the equation?
K through 5, as well as children of all ages in this country, have a very difficult time with policy. You're absolutely right. I agree with you.
So do adults.
You're absolutely right. But getting from where we are to public policy, we just spent $6 billion to stay in place, as I said earlier, in the past election. Americans have a difficult time grappling with the complexity of getting public policy to where it actually has meaning.
So, Bill McKibben?
I find K through 5 deals really well with policy. Clean up after yourself is a sort of universal that's really good with young kids.
But
when I talk with young kids like that, what I say is, here are some of the pictures, the 40,000 pictures in our Flickr account at 350.org from actions all over the world. Look at them, because you'll see that they're led by young people all over the world, and many of them quite young, that you can be a part of this powerful, growing movement. And that's what people of all ages need. The thing that's scary about global warming is it seems too big for any one of us to take on by ourselves. And indeed, it is too big for any one of us to take on by ourselves. But we're no longer by ourselves. When you talk with kids, you have to give them some sense of agency, of power, that coming together to make this thing all right. And we are. I don't know whether we can do it in time, because we have very powerful forces on the other side, but by God, we're giving it a good fight.
Do you accept, though, John Hofmeister's point that it's individual responsibility, that those individuals, everyone listening to this on the radio in this room, have to accept some responsibility?
Absolutely.
It's not just blaming the
Absolutely.
Bad oil company.
Absolutely. But nobody that I know of cares at all whether their power comes from the sun and the wind or fossil fuel. In fact, almost everybody would rather it came from clean sources. The only people who are spending hundreds of millions of dollars a day lobbying to make sure that it keeps coming from dirty sources are the fossil fuel industry. That's because that's where their bacon is, you know? And so that's why, I mean, I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, and, you know, we're all, very few of us pass, we're beyond the K through 5 level here, so I figure we just talk absolutely openly. But that's why we have to oppose the fossil fuel industry in vigorous and powerful ways, because they're at bottom the driver of this continued craziness that's, melting the Arctic, acidifying the ocean, doing things that five-year-olds should not have to hear about, because as adults, we should have stepped up long ago and not looked at the melting Arctic and said, let's drill for oil there, looked at the melting Arctic and said, my God, what are we doing?
Let's have our next audience question.
Jerry Hinkle, I'm an economist and a member of Citizens Climate Lobby, and a question for you, Mr. Hofmeister. Economists pretty much universally believe that charging firms for pollution will improve both our environment and the economy. Bill has provided a great suggestion: raise those revenues, give them right back to people. It sounds consistent with your objectives. Would you be willing to ask the API and the Chamber of Commerce to support a price on carbon?
Well, I've been public in exactly that, to the point they're tired of hearing me. Because it's why I was for a cap and trade system, which effectively, in a different way, puts a price on carbon. I consider it an incentive type system rather than a punitive type system. But whether it's one or the other, the price on carbon is, I think it's a manageable proposition. I think how we go about it and who pays is an important policy discussion. But I haven't been opposed in principle ever to putting some kind of responsibility on consumers and producers to do what can be done in order to, move this whole thing forward. And I thought long and hard before I joined Shell back in 1997 about whether I wanted to get into this game, and decided that was the right thing to do, because you can work inside the tent more effectively than outside the tent.
Why did ExxonMobil support a carbon tax?
Because it wouldn't pass.
So,
I mean, I'm saying that rather cynically, and I realize that. But at the time, if you notice, there's been dead silence on a carbon tax ever since the election of 2010, and ever since Waxman-Markey went south.
Some conservative circles are looking at British Columbia as a model and thinking about recognizing if cap and trade is political poison, carbon tax, fee and dividend, some mechanism, people recognize there's going to be a price on carbon.
And to be fair to ExxonMobil, because I was just cynical about them, they promoted the carbon tax because they felt the cap and trade was too complex for people to understand. We disagreed. I sat at the table with ExxonMobil across. We discussed it. We debated it. And so we found out that cap and trade couldn't get through Congress. So maybe a carbon tax could. We'll see what happens, if anything. But having just listened to all of the president's remarks over the last 2 years, the deafening silence on climate has been remarkable. And we'll see if anything changes come January 20th.
We're discussing America's energy future with John Hoffmeister, former president of Shell Oil, and the advocate Bill McKibben. I'm Greg Dalton. Let's have our next audience question.
Hi, everybody. My name is Clara Vondrich. I'm the Director of Leadership Initiatives at the Climate Works Foundation. I want to thank you both for being here, especially Mr. Hoffmeister. You're really brave to come into this liberal hotbed known as Climate One. I really appreciate you being here. It's important to have the debate with all sides. But I did want to say in the same breath, don't believe the hype. You know, I disagree with almost everything that you said, aside from the need for campaign finance reform, which I think is vital, and I think most people would agree. But as far as the delay tactics, the smoke screens, the red herrings, such as, oh, you know, we need to just put much more money in R&D. We need to be the first people in the Arctic so we can set the right standards. If we don't drill the oil, somebody else will. These are smoke screens. These are red herrings. They're reasons for delay, and I'm not going to buy into them. There is hope, on the other hand. I'll just mention that the carbon tax debate is really heating up, and there's this amazing groundswell among conservatives. We just had at ClimateWorks Eli Lehrer, who's the former member of the Heartland Institute, who left this summer to start his own shop in opposition to Heartland's really kind of scathing billboard campaign where they liken climate believers to Ted Kaczynski and other serial killers. He left because enough was enough, and he's actually now starting a new shop in Washington calling for a carbon tax. He's working with Bob Inglis. He's working with others in the same field. And next week, AEI, Brookings Institute, will have a big carbon tax debate. These are not liberals, as you know, and it can be streamed live. Everyone can check it out, and the tide is turning, and I hope that companies like Shell will indeed see the amazing opportunities ahead. You guys could be first movers in this field. You guys could take the lead and make a transition to a new paradigm. It's
Thank
up
you.
To you.
All right. John Hoffmeister? Yeah. Well, get out front of that parade?
Thank you. And I have to say for the record that I'm no longer a part of Shell. I retired in 2008, but I still have great affinity for what the company has been and is doing today. I don't agree that these are smoke screen. I don't agree with the smoke screen attribution. I've been at this a long time. I've been given a lot of thought. I've dealt with the realities. There's a difference between theory and practice. If you can't fill your tank this week, you're berserk. If you're a consumer, and when I'm saying you in a generic sense, some of you in the room may say, well, I don't have a tank. That's fine. I don't have to worry about it. That's great for your lifestyle. But every day, millions and millions of people get to work because that's their only way to get to work. And if those people aren't taken care of, somebody could rise above it all and say, I will tell you the better way. But that's an autocracy. I don't believe in autocracy. I believe in democracy. I'm all in favor of spending the rest of my days helping to educate people so they can perform an intelligent task called, or intelligent opportunity called voting, to vote for what makes common sense for them and their family. But to tell people what they should do doesn't work in our society, and the more telling that goes on, the longer it's going to take to get anything done, in my opinion.
And would you agree that the faster we get off oil, the better?
Absolutely. I've been practicing that for years. But there is a reality today, and we're not getting off of it today, or tomorrow, or the day after. So we need the substitutions in technology. We don't have them yet. I disagree that the Prius or the hybrid is the solution. That may be a solution for some. But we're a big country with a lot of people with a lot of different aspirations and needs, and they're not going to buy a Prius or a Volt or what's on offer today. The market share is growing, but very, very slowly.
That's true, Bill McKibben.
Well, yeah. I mean, but if that's the reality that you're, you know, worried most about, instead of the reality that each degree increase in global average temperature from this point is projected, the Stanford agronomists say, to cut grain yields 10%, or that the ocean is becoming, its pH is steadily changing, or on and on and on. If the reality that really concerns you most is that someone might have to, who wants something else, might have to settle for a Prius.
We've got a situation, and it calls for a solution that upholds our domination of the planet. We're gonna make our case, and we're gonna make it well. And if you don't like our logic, you can can it. We'll use impeccable intelligence from any country in the world, as long as we all see eye to eye. And if we don't find quite what we need, we know what to do. Just look into the camera and lie. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. We'll lie about the missiles and the nuclear research. We'll lie about uranium. We'll build military bases and smile for reporters as we give away bubblegum. We'll lie about Bin Laden, his connections with the Saudis. We'll lie about 9-1-1. We'll lie about the Baathists, their connections to Al-Qaeda, because we know there's none. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. We'll lie about the North Koreans, and we'll lie about Iran, and don't mention Israel. Keep those nuclear weapons out of this song, and we'll all get together swell. And we'll liberate these people, we'll liberate their money, we'll liberate their soil. We'll liberate their airports, we'll liberate their harbors, and we'll liberate their oil. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L.
And now for something completely different.